The title of the message for today is For This Purpose I Was Born. For This Purpose I Was Born. What does that sound like? What does that sound like? What for this purpose I was born? Sounds like a purpose of life. And my question to all of you is, what is your purpose in this life? Okay. Do you have a purpose? Okay. I think when Jesus said, for this purpose I was born, that's an amazing statement. Some years ago, when I come across this passage, I was just like, really awakened. Who could say a statement like that, right? I think people struggle to know the purpose of life and, you know, what do I go to school for? What do I get married? What do I become a father? I mean, you know, people struggle to know the purpose of life and a lot of times we just kind of give up. Do I just exist? Do I live as others do? Eat, drink, live to please my desires and flesh? Is that it? Is that okay? However, there is a yearning, deep yearning. Okay. My soul will not be satisfied or find true happiness without answering that, right? But in order to answer this insatiable quest of the soul, what is the purpose of my life? I think there are significant other questions that we need to answer first. Okay, what are those? Possibly, where am I going with my life? One day, I'll age and I'll get sick and I die. What's going to happen to me, right? Is there such thing as reality after death? And where did I come from? And question like, who am I? What am I? Oh, I'm a, talking to myself, I'm a dentist. I'm a father. I'm a pastor. Is that who you are? Does that answer and satisfy the quest of your deep soul? I don't think so. What I'm trying to say is these are significant questions, and we call that truth questions. Let me just ask you something. What is truth? That's exactly what Pilate asked. I think the encounter between Jesus and encounter is historic and representative. Represents his two greatest kingdom, one on earth and one in eternity, right? Roman Empire and the kingdom of God. And he said, incredibly, that I was born and I came into this world to tell you the truth. What is the truth? Definition of the truth, we went over this some time ago, that which is in accordance with facts and realities. So let me ask you, is heaven reality? Is a fact? A lot of you may not agree with that. A lot of people certainly in this world do not agree with that. They say you die and you become dust. Atheistic thinking. That's it. Are they right? Or is heaven and God a reality? Fact, people. I'm not asking whether you kind of like sense it in your mind, you agree with that or not, but is that a fact? Is that truth? Is that a reality? And according to Jesus, yes, it is. Not only it is a reality and fact, but I came to tell you that. Is God reality? And I was thinking right before this service, if Jesus and God is reality and fact or the truth, could there be a greater reality? Is your life greater than God reality? If there is God? Reason with me, people. Okay? Reason with me. But we continue to struggle with this reality. Is there really judgment? We feel like there isn't. We feel like everything will kind of work out in the end. But that's your thinking. That may not be true. If that is contrary to what Jesus says, share, which is what he came to do, then you are believing a lie. I think that's a logical statement. So, question to you is, what is the purpose of your life? Or does it matter to know? Okay? You know, Pilate, in today's text, asked this question, probably in cynical sense. Maybe it's wistful. What is truth? Standing before Jesus. I think that's the most, symbolic conversation between God and humanity. What is truth? Standing before God. But today, here in Jesus, in Roman trial, so it is a very critical time, and yet he still reveals truth, truth that we must hear. Okay? He says, as he was defending himself, for this purpose I was born, for this purpose I have come into the world, is to tell you and to bear the witness of the truth, to the truth. And then he repeats this, whoever belongs to the truth, true reality, true facts, listens to me. Okay? So, that's the intro. Last week, we looked at Jesus' first trial, which is Jewish trial. For those of you who are joining for the first time, Jesus was sentenced to death in two courts in one day in one city. That's pretty amazing, isn't it? Completely different jurisdiction. One Jewish court and Roman court. One represents kingdom of God on earth, and one represents the greatest kingdom in history. And in both courts, he was sentenced to death. And we talked about that last week, and today we want to look at the second part, which is the Roman trial, which is made up of three subsections. Today we'll be looking at the first one. And today's text, believe it or not, is a trial. And I didn't know that, actually. And if you just read, superficially, you don't even know where you are. You don't really follow what the conversation is between Jesus and Pilate. We want to look at those, and then perhaps we will hear what we need to know about. What is the purpose of my life? Okay, so that's what we want to do. Last week, in the first part of the trial, Jesus self-incriminate, and he was charged with blasphemy, and he was sentenced to death. And I find that so ironic. He is God, but he was convicted of someone who has claimed to be God. Isn't that kind of interesting? Blasphemy, and yet he is God. He is speaking the truth, but he was charged to someone who is claiming, someone crazy person who is claiming to be God. So Jewish trial and the Roman trial, there are similarities and then there are differences. The trials are similar and same are different in terms of jurisdictions, charges, and the judges. Okay, charge for Jewish trial was blasphemy. What about the charge for the Roman trial? It wasn't blasphemy. It was treason, high treason. Okay, which is very, very significant thing that we will talk about. However, the common elements between these two trials are the accusers are the same. When you hear the word accuser, what comes to your mind? Yeah, Satan is, he's an accuser, right? But the common thing between these two trials is that accuser and the accused are the same. Now, why were there two trials? Jewish trial and then Roman trial. You know why? Because of the plan of God. And then you say, of course. But here's why. Jewish court at the time in first century lost their power to administer death penalty. And the whole world was reigned by Roman Empire. Okay, and Roman Empire under Pax Romana, okay, given certain right to each governments, and yet the whole Rome was reigning the whole world. And basically, all these countries did not have right to sentence someone to death. But can I just tell you something that's going to bring down a chill on your spine? I found out this week that the time that happened, the law changed so that the Jewish government and Jewish court could not sentence someone to death happened only 3 years before Jesus went to the cross. Okay? According to historians, secular historians, that it's called issu gladitis, and the sword is only for the Rome, only happened 40 years before the fall of Jerusalem, which is AD 70. And 40 years before that, it would be AD 30. That's when Jesus began the ministry. You know, when I was reading that, wait a minute, what about his birth? Do you know where he was birthed? Bethlehem. Why was he birthed at Bethlehem? Because it was prophesied in the book of Micah, 600 years ago, the Messiah will be born in, will be birthed at Bethlehem. But he lived in Galilee, which is about several hundred miles away from that. And Mary was fully pregnant and not even married with Joseph and ready to give birth. But how did she give birth at Bethlehem then? You know what happened? It was the Caesar of the Roman Empire decided to take census, telling the whole Roman world, go to your hometown. Do you know how Jesus was birthed at Bethlehem? It is through Caesar's changing and calling the law. So his birth, as well as his death, is controlled by someone who's reigning the whole world at the time. I don't know whether you're hearing it. God is reigning the history, people. God is reigning the history. So it's pretty amazing. Just a few years before Jesus was actually crucified, the law changed because he was found guilty to death in the Jewish court. And the way of capital punishment is, stone to death. That's not what has been predicted. Jesus said, Son of Man must be lifted up. Remember that? How do you lift it up and get killed by stone to death? That's not fulfilling his word. John chapter 12, Jesus predicted that when I am lifted up from the earth, I will draw all men to myself. So he had to be crucified. So it had to go to the Roman court. And in order for that to happen, God had to change the law just 3 years before. It goes back even further, people. If you read Galatians chapter 3, Paul writes that, you know, Jesus was cursed by being lifted up. And where in the Bible that was that predicted? In Deuteronomy chapter 21, verse 23, anyone who is hung on a tree is under God's curse. Now, if you think about it, that's an amazing statement. Deuteronomy was written way before Roman Empire existed. Way before that. And yet God predicted that Messiah will be sent and he will be cursed, hung on a tree. And, you know, the way of, crucifixion and Roman Empire did not even exist, but that was predicted and Jesus fulfilled it. And that's why we had to have two trials. This is a unique, fascinating situation. In the first Jewish trial under a court of God's law, we talked about this, which seek to apply his very attribute. So very just and very merciful court. It is very difficult to sentence someone to death, and yet they managed to sentence someone, not only guilty, but sentence to death someone who is righteous. Remember that? We talked about this. How did that happen? It wasn't the court. It was Jesus himself self-criminate. Basically, telling that I am the Son of God. I am the Christ, right? And remember this. So just putting it all together, Jesus stood charged with blasphemy in one court and treason in another. And basically, he went to the cross and he was crucified. Blasphemy against Jehovah and treason against Caesar. So let's consider Roman trial today when Pilate would find no charges. You know, if you look at next couple of chapters, and you should, this story of Jesus and Pilate is recorded in all four Gospels. I explained to you, that means that's very, very important. And here's where you find it. If you go to the second to the last chapter of each Gospel, you will find Pilate. That's pretty significant. Chapter 27 of Matthew, chapter 15 of Mark, chapter 23 of Luke, and chapter 18 and 19 of John's Gospel, you will find Jesus before Pilate. That's the subtitle. And if you think about that subtitle, it's pretty pretty significant. Jesus was standing before Pilate. But if you read the content, it doesn't seem like it. Jesus is very composed, just like the Jewish trial. But you will find Pilate kind of like frantic. He was so scared. He tried to release him. Three times he announced that Jesus is not guilty. He is not guilty. But eventually, he ended up handing him over to the cross. It doesn't seem like Jesus before Pilate. It may even look like Pilate before Jesus. Okay, so plan for today is I want us to look at three main characters of the account, namely Jesus and the Pilate and the Jewish leaders. Jesus is the defendant of this Roman trial. Pilate is the judge of this trial, and the Jewish leaders are the accusers, okay? The ones who are set to murder and kill this righteous Jesus out of their hatred and envy and hatred. You know, if you are envious, if you are so jealous, it will drift into hatred. And hatred is powerful. Eventually, you want to just kill him. You want him to disappear. Okay, that's what we're going to see today. So let's go to the text. Okay, starting with verse 28, okay, all the way to verse 38, only 11 verses, and entire thing is the trial. Look at it as the court. Okay, that's what we're going to see. We begin with this introduction. Then the Jewish leaders led Jesus from the house of Caiaphas, which is the Jewish court, to the governor's headquarters, Praetorium. It was early in the morning. You know, people were running out of their time. Tomorrow is Sabbath, and tomorrow is the beginning of Passover. They had to get rid of. They have to finish the trial. They have to execute Jesus, and they have to finish everything before the sundown. So they were running out of their time. So they started their trial in the middle of the night. Now it's early in the morning. Now that they are done with this mock trial of Jewish court, now handing him over to the Roman trial. Okay, it was early in the morning. They themselves did not enter governor's headquarters so that they would not be defiled but could eat the Passover. I don't know whether you understand that. That's a significant statement. These people who are so set to kill and murder Jesus and engaging in the most vile act, judicial murder of Jesus, they want to keep themselves undefiled so that they'll be able to participate in Passover meal, which is their religious tradition. Do you see it? Okay, do you see it? Let me read a little more. So Pilate went outside to them and said, "What accusation do you bring against this man?" That's the beginning of the trial. What accusation? They answered him, "If this man were not doing evil, we would not have delivered him over to you." And Pilate said to him, then take him yourselves and judge him by your own law. And the Jews said to him, it is not lawful for us to put anyone to death. You see, what's going on is the trial has begun, and the judge is asking, what is the charge? So instead of this accusers telling the judge what they're charging him for, they say something very, very kind of awkward. They said, well, so what accusation do you bring against this man? And they answered him, if this man were not doing evil, we would not have even delivered him over to you. Does that sound like a legitimate charge? It doesn't. What they're saying is, just trust us. He's evil. Just execute him for me. No trial. Just execute him for me. And yet, the response of Pilate is kind of different. Pilate said to him, then, if that's the case, take him to your own court. You kill him. Do you see what's going on? There's a tension building here. Okay? Take him yourself and judge him by your own law. And Jews said to him, it is not lawful for us to put anyone to death. And verse 32 is a significant verse. It says, this was to fulfill the word that Jesus had spoken to show by what kind of death he was going to die. What does that mean? Okay. Jesus had to be lifted up. But if Pilate does not cooperate and he is sentenced to death, he will not be crucified. But that had to happen. How did that happen? It had to be going from Jewish court to the Roman court. But there is no charge, the real thing, to charge Jesus to death. If you read the whole case, three times he announces that Jesus is not guilty. Not guilty, not guilty, not guilty. He was completely acquitted. And yet, he was sentenced to the cross. So, we see the Jewish leaders, what are they doing? They are handing Jesus over to Pilate, and yet they are concerned about their religion. These are the religious people. They want to keep themselves not defiled so that they could eat the Passover meal. What is the Passover? Do you remember? Passover is the Old Testament salvation story of Israel. Israel was under the slavery, under Egyptian empire, for 430 years. And God sent Moses, and through signs and wonders, he delivers Israelites from the slavery. How did he do that? Through the signs and wonders. And the tenth one was, the killing of the first son. And this is what happened. God was to send the angel of death that night, and he will go over entire country of Egypt and the region of Goshen where Israelites was, and every household, the firstborn, will be killed. Can you imagine here? I don't know how many families are represented here. Please try to imagine this. Imagine tonight, God will send a judgment and the firstborn will be killed. That'll be me. I'm a firstborn. June, you're included. Can you imagine that? So it's remembering the salvation, it's remembering the judgment. It's remembering the grace of God. That night, God's going to send the judgment, but there is a way to avoid the judgment. How do you do that? It was the blood. It was the blood of the Lamb. The blood to be applied in the doorpost and door frames. And that night, when the angel of death just hovers the entire country and region of Goshen, when the angel sees the blood, he will pass over. That's what it means. So what are they trying to remember through this Passover? Salvation of God, judgment of God, and the grace of God. And look at these people. They are handing this innocent man over out of jealousy, out of hatred, but they try to keep themselves pure. It's just the most pathetic picture of a hypocrite religious people. Okay? That's what we see here. What about Pilate? What do we know about Pontius Pilate? Can I just tell you something? Pontius Pilate is a historical figure. He's recorded in secular history books. Okay? A lot of times we tend to think story of Jesus is like a fairy tale or something that we kind of imagine things. No, it's not. It's a historical document. And Pontius Pilate was the fifth prefect or the procurator or the governor of Judea from AD 26 to AD 36. Now, this is important. That's why I'm sharing this. When did Jesus begin his ministry? AD 30, right down where he is. I think that's a tragic, tragic life, isn't it? What's the purpose of Pilate in his life? What was the purpose of Pilate's life? We're talking about the purpose of life, aren't we? So 7 years prior to this day, he became the prefect or the procurator, and his name appears in the variety of extra-biblical sources by secular historians like Josephus and Philo. Okay? It's a historical figure, Pontius Pilate. What was his reputation? According to the secular historians, he was a harsh, dispassionate person who relentlessly pursued Roman authority in Judea. Well, that sounds like a normal, like, ruler of another country. He was harsh, dispassionate, relentlessly pursue Roman authority in Judea. So what was his relationship like with the Jews that where he reigned of Judea? He reigned with this kind of character and personality, and there are three incidences which I'm not going to go over because of the time's sake, which erupted people to, you know, start a riot in Judea. So the relationship between Pontius Pilate and the Jews were like, according to them, like a thin ice. Now, I think that's very important information. That's why, perhaps, he had to hand Jesus over to Calvary, okay? But when you look at the Gospels, Pilate, in the biblical records, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, and John, he comes across as a fair judge. He wants to have a fair trial. He even makes the right verdict. He's not guilty, right? Isn't that what we see? On separate occasions, he pronounced Jesus not guilty. Okay, he's a fair politician, governor. However, at the end, he hand Jesus over to be crucified. What happened? What happened? Okay, what's the reason? How are we to understand it? It is the Jewish leaders blackmailing Pilate. That's what was happening. The relationship between Pilate and the leaders of the nation was like thin ice. And under the something called Pax Romana, all the subjects of the Roman Empire had this right that if there is anything they do not agree, they could appeal it to directly to Caesar. Okay? So which is a very significant system in first century. So Pilate was, standing on thin ice. He had to be fair. He had to be a good governor. At the same time, he had to keep a good relationship with the leaders of that nation. Do you remember in chapter 19, when Pilate said he is not guilty, people began to like erupt and began to say, crucify him, crucify him, crucify him. It says, Jews cried out, if you release this man, Jesus, you are not Caesar's friend. That's a threat. That's a threat. Okay? So that's Pontius Pilate. Here we're going to see four essential elements of Roman trial. Indictment, examination, defense, and a verdict. And we're going to see all four of that. Okay? Indictment. So that's where he begins in verse 29. What accusation do you bring against this man? Indictment. And then there is an examination. What follows is the examination, the encounter between Pilate and Jesus. Let's look at it together, okay? So, let's begin. Verse 33. Somehow, Pilate bring Jesus in. What was the charge? What was the charge of Jesus? What was his crime? It's not in John's gospel, but if you go to Luke's gospel, it is listed. Three things are listed. Number one, you know, they were accusing Jesus. He's misleading the nation, which is a completely lie. Okay, that wasn't discussed. And then the second reason was Jesus is forbidding us to give taxes or tribute to Caesar, which is a complete lie as well. Remember on one occasion, someone tested Jesus. Should we pay tax to Caesar or should we not? That was a tricky question because as a Jewish Messiah, if he says yes, he's not really the king or Messiah. He can't say that. If you say no, he will be treated as a someone of a treason. So he can say yes, he can say no. But Jesus is omniscient, wise God. So what did he do? Bring a coin to me, Roman coin. And he's showing the coin, whose picture is this? And they said, Caesar's. And then Jesus said, what belongs to Caesar, give to Caesar. What belongs to God, give to God. Remember that? So that's a completely a false charge. But the third one was a significant one. He himself is claiming that he is the Christ and a king. Now that's an important one because as far as Rome is concerned, if there is a king and government that they do not know about, that was a threat to the Roman Empire. So he has to investigate that, and that's exactly what happens here. Pilate entered his headquarters again and called Jesus and said to him, are you the king of the Jews? That's the question. You will find this question in all four Gospels. Are you the king of the Jews? Is that yes or no? He is the king, and yet he had to answer this question, right? So Jesus answered in a very peculiar way. Do you say this out of your own accord, or did others say it to you about me? What is he saying? This is what he's saying. Are you asking this question from Rome's perspective? Are you asking this question from Jews' perspective? What do you mean by that? From Rome's perspective, if he's the political king who would be a threat to Roman government, now that's a problem. But he is not a king of that kind of government. So he's asking this question. Are you asking this from Rome's perspective or are you asking from a Jewish perspective? Pilate answered, am I a Jew? And his answer is, of course I'm not asking from the Jewish perspective. I'm asking from Rome's perspective. My guess is Pilate already knew. My guess is Pilate already knew that it was the jealousy and envy and jealousy of the religious leaders wanted to kill Jesus. He already knew. If you look at it, he already knew, right? So, am I a Jew? Your own nation and your chief priest have delivered you over to me. What have you done? Now, that's an illegal question as a judge. Remember we talked about this last week? Judges and jury does not have to pursue after questions. They have to stay neutral and just. But here we go again. What have you done? Try to, you know, pull out some more information. What does Jesus do? He does not answer about that. You know, a lot of people say Jesus was silent during his trial. He wasn't silent. If you read, he spoke when he needed to speak. And he was silent when he was needed to be silent. Don't you see that? And then he gives his truth. Verse 36. And now Jesus answered, my kingdom that you are so concerned about is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, my servants would have been fighting and I might not be delivered over to the Jews. But my kingdom is not of this world. What is Jesus saying? He is saying, I am not a king of the kind of kingdom that you are concerned about, but I am a king. He is defending himself at a trial. At the same time, he's giving the truth. I am a king of a kingdom. My kingdom. But my kingdom is not of this world. Do you hear it? What kingdom do you belong to? I think that's a significant question, because unless you could answer that, you will know what the purpose of your life is. What kingdom do you belong to? What citizenship do you have? Well, I'm a U.S. citizen. I know, but you know, that's not what I'm asking. Which kingdom do you belong to? Who is your king? These are significant questions, people. Unless you could answer these questions, truth questions, and your positional questions, I don't think you could answer that question, for this purpose I was born. You will never be able to answer that. It's pretty amazing. He's defending himself, so he's going toward the acquittal, not guilty. At the same time, he's giving significant spiritual truth. My kingdom is not of this world. My kingdom is not of this world. And the proof is, if my kingdom were of this world, my servants would have fought, okay, with the Jews, and I would not be delivered over to the Jews. But they didn't. They didn't. I stopped them. My kingdom is not of this world. And then Pilate wanted to reiterate. Then Pilate said to him, verse 37, so you are a king. So you are a king. Okay? Jesus answered, you say that I am a king. Yes, I am a king. And then he says, for this purpose I was born. And for this purpose I came into this world, to bear witness to the truth. Do you hear it? Amazing truth. As he defended himself in the Roman court. What happens next, I think, is the most tragic thing. Okay? And then Jesus invites Pilate and invite all of us. Everyone who is of the truth listens to my voice. Do you listen to his word as reality and facts? Or do you follow whatever you hear from elsewhere? It's a real question. Remember, truth is about that which is in accordance with facts and reality. Is heaven reality? Is a fact? Do you believe that? Do you follow that? Or do you listen to something else? He said, everyone who is of the truth listens to me. Remember, we went over this attribute of God, that God is true and he's truthful. Whatever he speaks and whatever he does is truthful. He cannot lie at all. It's impossible for him to lie. If he says heaven is a reality, and if you don't believe it, then you are believing a lie. That's a logical statement, people. Oh, I kind of believe it, but I don't know whether I really feel it. Like, you're believing a lie. You're believing a lie. Jesus actually came to reveal and speak the truth to you so that you will live. Do you believe God is a reality? God is a fact. Pretty soon, we will not be existing. What do you mean? Maybe not pretty soon. Another 100 years, none of us will be existing on earth. That's a fair thing to say, right? We're not even going to be existing. And we're trying to say, God, you're not real? On what basis do you claim that? And what kind of chance are you foolishly taking? Jesus came to speak the truth. Ho aletheia. This is the reality. This is the fact. And it had to come from him, because he is the first-hand witness of the heaven's reality. He's the only one. Do you follow? And then what happens is Pilate said to him, what is truth? What kind of tone is that? What kind of tone do you kind of imagine? Was he like, what is truth? I tried everything. I'm a postmodern. There is no absolute truth. What is truth? Is that it? Or is it something like, in a deep, reflective way, wistful way, what is truth? Where do you stand? Where do you stand? Without the truth, you will never know what the purpose of your life is. You just exist and taking a huge chance. And you don't even reflect upon it. This week I had a meeting with a member of this church, which really made me reflect and really blessed. I'm going to leave the gender as a neuter, but that person is not neuter. This person told me, after working in the secular world for several years, something really made this person not happy. So we were just talking. What have you learned over the years and over the last few months? And person said, you know, my career was me. My job was what was driving me. That was who I was. I don't know whether that make any sense to you. And as I was listening to that, I was just so blessed to hear, because a lot of people sense that, but they never stop. They just keep going. They just don't care. But this person stopped and was sharing with me. And you know, as I was listening to that, wow, it sounds like I'm hearing so many people's story. Okay? Jesus saying, I came to tell you the truth, what true facts and realities are. Is heaven reality? Is God reality? Is judgment reality? Heaven reality? Hell reality? He said it is. They are. And I don't know where you stand. And then just ask, what is truth? It's a tragic picture, isn't it? Tragic picture. So the examination is done. Finally, the verdict. What's the verdict? Okay, verse 38, Pilate said to him, what is the truth? And he has said this. He went back outside to the Jews, and the verdict is, I find no guilt in him. Does that sound like a complete trial? Yeah, it is. It's a Roman trial. There was that accusation, there was that examination, and there was that defense of Jesus, and then there was the verdict. Okay, that's today's text. I want to just close thinking about these three people one more time. We found three different characters in this historic Roman trial of Jesus with Pontius Pilate. First, we have seen the religious Jewish leaders. What was the purpose of their life? Do you remember Jesus said regarding Judas, it would have been better if he wasn't born? I think that's truth to all those who's going to finish this life without Christ. I think that's true. I'm really convinced. I think that is true. What was the purpose of these religious leaders' life? They were going through the hoops, like so many of us. People go to church. People do religious things. We celebrate religious time. And yet their heart was full of hatred, lies, and murder, which are the characters of Satan himself. They go into hysteria, robust hatred, from desire to kill to determined to kill. In fact, you're going to see that hysteria later on, like creating mob action, kill him, threatening Pilate. Unless you do that, you're not friend of Caesar. They are so determined to kill. Okay. They just speak lies unconscionably. It doesn't bother you anymore. It doesn't matter anymore. Blasphemy, treason, it doesn't matter anymore as long as he gets killed. Right? Yet they are concerned about their outward religious duties. I think that's a tragic picture of someone. Tragic picture of someone without Christ. Without Christ. Secondly, we look at Pilate, Pontius Pilate. Historic person. Tragic person. What was the purpose of Pontius Pilate's life? You know, We'll be looking at his life further in part two and part three of Roman trial. I suppose he wanted to be a decent political leader. He wanted to judge this subject fairly. We see that. So he even comes to the right verdict. This man, I find no guilt. He's not guilty. He did it right, right? Yet his heart was set on keeping his career going. That's me. I can't lose that. If I lose my career, then I don't exist. That's the purpose of my life as a governor, and I have to keep going, right? So I have to be fair, good leader, and I have to keep my good relationship with these evil leaders. So I'm kind of like in between. And I think that's the message. You feel like you're in between? You're going to kill Jesus at the end. You're going to give up Jesus at the end. Okay? That's the dilemma, isn't it? That's the dilemma Pontius Pilate had. He wanted to be a good leader, fair leader, but he had to keep his relationship with these evil leaders. So I'm kind of in between. That's the dilemma. I have to get my job going, my career going, my American dream going, but I need to buy a house going, right? But that might be the dilemma of so many people that we face in this challenging world, right? Keep my security. If I lose my career, then, yeah. Pilate struggled, and he came to the right verdict. He's innocent. He's no threat to the Rome. He's no threat to my world. Finally, he cynically asked, what is truth? What is truth? Okay. Finally, Jesus, the third and final character, standing before Pontius Pilate and telling him, I have come. I was born for this purpose, to tell you the truth. Tell what the facts are, what the realities are. Pilate stood before Jesus, people. You come to church every single week for 20, 30 years. And my question to you is, what's the purpose of your life? Right? Today, friends, will you come to Christ? Because he not only came to testify the truth, but he is the truth. Without him, you are living in a lie. Taking a great risk. Try to stay neutral. But at the end, those people who try to stay neutral will give up Jesus. They will, just like Pilate. Friends, I want to invite you. Come to Christ. For real. For real. Is heaven real to you? Is eternity real to you? Is that a fact to you? Or is that a myth to you? Jesus said, I came to reveal the truth. He said, whoever has the Son has life. But whoever does not have Son, the wrath of God remains upon you. Is that a lie? That's the reality. That's the fact, people. And he's inviting us. Come to me. Come to me. Believe in me. I came to share the truth so that you will live. I pray that you'll find your purpose in life. Because I know of someone who found his life, purpose of his life, and he stated this way. And I love that verse. I consider my life worth nothing to me unless I finish the race and complete the task that God has given me, which is to testify the gospel of grace. Sounds like Jesus. I pray that you will find the purpose of your life in him. Let's pray.